Welcome to a very special edition of The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a conversation with both of California's U.S. senators together. It is the first broadcast interview with LaFonza Butler, California's newest senator, who was appointed literally days after Dianne Feinstein passed away. And with her is the now senior senator from California, Alex Padilla. We originally had scheduled an interview with Senator Padilla. His team reached out to us the day before and said, what if we brought Senator Butler along, who, of course, is somebody we've been reaching out to consistently since she got in there. And we were thrilled to have the two of them together. You can see that they've got real personal chemistry. It was my first time meeting LaFonza Butler and was really impressed by her. She's a very dynamic and fun and interesting person. And Alex Padilla is somebody I've known and liked, obviously, for probably a decade now. So this was interesting because I didn't know what she was going to say because we'd never really seen her do something like this. But I think it's an extended conversation that gives you a good sense of who she is, what she's about, and you can see their dynamic as well. So here is our full extended conversation with the senators. This is your first joint interview together. So thanks so much for being here on The Issue Is, and welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Senator Butler, let's start with you, because this is an introduction for a lot of people. Like a month ago, could you have even imagined that you would be a United States senator?
It was not on my bingo card, Alex. Yeah. I was the president of Emily's List and proudly working to help to elect and support Democratic pro-choice women who were running at every level of the ballot across the country. And, you know, in a time where reproductive freedom has been so at risk, I was 100% singularly focused on doing that work.
So walk us through the process. Walk us through the phone call.
it was a quite intense moment. It was when the country was really maybe hours away from a government shutdown. And the governor reached out and talked with me about and asked me to if I would consider taking on the role, and talked with me about what, from his perspective, was at stake and what I could contribute in this moment. And I said, thank you, goodbye. I did what most would do, right? I consulted my family. I searched my own soul, and I had to think a lot about what Senator Feinstein had done at the most pivotal moment in her career, mm-hmm. when San Francisco went through its that most horrible tragedy. Senator Feinstein raised her hand. Mm-hmm. And I wound up calling the governor back and choosing to raise my hand for my state and for my country.
And we remember your phone call with the governor. That was on camera, so we all sort of experienced that together. We've got some video of that, which was such an emotional experience for you when Governor Newsom asked you. You obviously had a little bit more time to prepare for that moment.
Right. Well, not just preparing for that moment, but respecting what the transition has been like for Senator Butler.
Right.
In hindsight, I had a whopping 28 days to tie up loose ends in the Secretary of State's office, assemble the staff, policy briefings, et cetera. 48 hours, still drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what has been your advice?
I have honestly just tried to be as helpful and supportive as I can be during this time. I've had the blessing of knowing Senator Butler since she first came to Los Angeles in 2009. We've had a chance to work together on a number of issues, different capacities that I've served in, from state senate, secretary of state, now senate, her capacities within labor, in corporate America, as an advisory consultant, and of course, now Emily's List. So it's been pretty seamless for us, but there's a lot, and I appreciate her heeding the call at this critical time. When she talks about we were literally hours away from a government shutdown, it wasn't just a shutdown and the urgency of needing that vote. Every vote matters in the Senate, but everything that it represents, the impact of a government shutdown on working families across the country, especially here in California, but also the politics of what led to the shutdown. Right? The extreme Republicans have tried to shut down government. They did not succeed. And now they've shut down the House of Representatives, trying to bring Congress to a grinding halt. We deserve better. And there's so many big picture items that warrant our attention that it's just great to have a partner and Senator Butler like this.
What has he meant to you in these early days?
Oh, he has meant everything. He is, it's not been about telling me what to do, but it really has been a real partnership in, he has loaned a staff. He has, helped to guide me in terms of how the body really, really moves. And most importantly, he's called me every day. He sent me a text. He has checked in. How are you doing? What can I help with? Here are some things that I was thinking about at this point, and some things that I've been working on over the last day or so. But he is his partnership, our relationship, I think, is going to continue. Is going to serve California well.
There were some critics at the time that pointed out the fact that you were living in Maryland as a resident at the time. What is your response to those critics?
Look, my response to the critics is, like, you just heard the senator talk about meeting me in California in 2009. You can look at, the fact that I have been in and a part of most major battles on behalf of workers in this state over the last decade. This is the only home my daughter knows. I love this state. It is the city and the state that raised my wife. And here is where we belong, and here is where I'm committed to continue to serve.
And so now you're moving back, technically.
I am here and ready to do the work.
So the big question, of course, is, are you running?
It is the big question, and all of what I have had to think about in the last 7 days has been about accepting the position, getting sworn in, finding a staff, the Saturday after my first week in the space, there is another war happening in Israel. We are just a few weeks away from a potential shutdown again. I have been really focused on honoring the legacy of Senator Feinstein, doing the work that is in front of me, and trying to preserve the economic opportunity and progress that we've made for Californians and avoiding this shutdown.
So you haven't made up your mind yet?
No decision as of yet.
What is the process, though? What are you thinking about? What would make you run? What would make you not run?
Yeah. First and foremost, Alex, if I'm really being honest, is appreciating that for the last 2 years, I have spent every waking moment trying to convince women across the country, more women of color, with varied backgrounds across the country, that this is the moment where their community needs them to raise their hand and run for office. And, here I have the opportunity to consider those same choices, and that is really weighing on me. I'm thinking about the advice that I've given to other women that have been thinking about this very question, and so I'm trying to be thoughtfully process that advice that I've given. I'm thinking about my family, the divisive nature and of the harassment that is happening both online and in real life. My mother is 70 years old. She didn't sign up for this. My daughter is 9. She didn't sign up for this. And so I'm thinking about my family, my family's safety. I've already gotten my first piece of hate mail, and a stranger has shown up at my door. And so that is a real contemplation for me, and really thinking about what can I contribute to the country moving forward. What are my unique talents and skills? I know that I have them, and it's a question about, how do I process all of those things and do the job at the same time.
So a timeline matter of what?
Who knows?
Days, weeks? Okay. And are you going to be endorsing in the race?
Yeah, well, I got to respect the time frame and the decision-making process first. Up until now, I have not because California is going to elect a Democrat. In addition to my day job, I'm serving as a vice chair of the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee. So my goal is whoever is successful in next year's election, that they're coming into a Democratic majority, because we know how much a majority matters. You look at the work that we've been able to do in the prior session of Congress, when Democrats are in the majority of the House and the Senate, President Biden in the White House. We've got to get back to that, because what we have in the middle is a dysfunctional House Republican majority.
Let's talk about, you know, the big issue of the week that you're both now confronting, which is what's happening in Israel. What do you think is the proper U.S. response at this point?
Look, I think thus far, President Biden has done exactly what he needs to do. Articulate on behalf of not just our government, but our country, that we stand with our ally Israel in its right to defend itself against this terrorist, heinous, unprovoked attack in southern Israel. So I applaud his decision to move yet another aircraft carrier to the Mediterranean, increase our presence, bolster our readiness should you know, the worst come to happen over the next couple of days, the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a little while. One thing I've made it a point to emphasize in all the conversations I've had this week is, as we're thinking about this, let's be clear. Hamas is a terrorist organization. This is not a nation versus nation, a country versus country conflict. This is our ally, Israel, the only democracy in the region, trying to defend itself against a terrorist organization whose mission is to eliminate the state of Israel. So let's be clear-eyed about that.
And you've been pretty unequivocal in your support for Israel, too, in your denunciation of Hamas.
I have. And, yeah, I want to align my comment, align myself with Senator Padilla's comments. The president has made a very clear statement about where we need to be as a country. We are making sure that Israel has everything it needs. It has been our strongest ally. And, Alex, I called my wife recently, and she was watching the news. And she's literally talking to me in tears because she had seen an Israeli woman carrying a dead baby. And, you know, as I am talking with her about how she's processing her feelings, had just finished a briefing led by Senator Schumer, where we're talking about the sort of policy and position of it and juxtaposing the policy and position with the emotions.
Humanity.
That my wife is communicating to me, and just the recognition of humanity across thousands of miles. We are where we need to be. We have to stand with our strongest ally, and we have to be very clear that hate cannot be tolerated.
You know, some Democrats have criticized some of the comments by some of the House Democrats, like Rashida Tlaib and others. Do you think that that needs to be condemned, some of what they have said?
I haven't watched and paid close attention to all of the statements that have been made. I'll be honest about that. The first thing that I want to make sure that I am focused on is not having others choose to divide the position of our party, the support of our president, and the position of our nation to deter violence around the world and to combat hate wherever it exists.
I know you've been working with some of the Americans that have been stuck there. Can you give us an update in terms of that and also in terms of the hostages?
Yeah. And first, let me also respond to the prior question, because I get the question, too. What about Palestinian civilians? What about innocent people on the other side of the border? I get it. I agree. They're victims, too. But until Hamas is eradicated, they will continue to be victims, and their path towards a better life is getting rid of Hamas, Hezbollah in the West Bank and elsewhere. It's getting out from under the thumb of internationally recognized terrorist organizations and their funders. So let's be clear about that. In terms of American citizens that are in Israel or even in Gaza, we've heard from some of them. We're working closely with the State Department and the Department of Defense to see how quickly we can identify and secure safe passage for those who want and need to leave. It is a very touchy situation, as you can imagine.
In terms of funding all of this, we do have this potential government shutdown just weeks away. The House is not functioning right now. There is no ability to do anything in the House until they figure out what happens with the House Speaker. How do you all handle that in the Senate? And what do you say to people that are concerned about that?
We stay engaged with President Biden and his administration working across the agencies, making sure that Israel is getting everything that it needs to defend itself. We start our own work, rolling up our sleeves and figuring out, are there things that are necessary that we have to start to think about by way of if there is a supplemental package and all of the things that may have to come afterward. But first things first is we've got to make sure that Israel has everything that we need and helping to support the administration in doing that and deterring further violence in the region.
This is the first joint interview for you guys on TV. What is sort of the biggest joint priority for the two of you for California moving forward?
It's where do we begin?
I know.
One of the reasons I'm so excited, not only because Senator Butler has been a personal friend for many years, but knowing that our values are aligned. Yeah. I mean, start with reproductive rights or LGBTQ rights or the need to combat climate change, the fight for voting rights, immigration reform, economic opportunity, environmental justice, like on and on and on. I know we're aligned and looking forward to working as that tag team in the Senate. So where do we begin? I think it's dealing with the issues at hand.
Yeah.
You know, to your point about, well, if the House isn't functioning, what can we do? Well, we can start with doing what's within our control.
Yeah.
The Senate will put forward a supplemental funding package to support Israel. We still have the incomplete homework from the last go-around of more support for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Not just to support Ukraine, but specifically supporting Ukraine in their defense against an unprovoked attack by Putin's Russia.
Yeah.
So this should not be an either-or conversation. We need to do both. And when we get back next week, that's going to be the first order of business.
What's priority issue number one for you as a senator?
honoring the seat that I'm sitting in.
Yeah.
Senator Feinstein just did so many incredible things to advance our nation, to move California forward. And so I am excited about being able to do that. At the same time, you know, Alex, I have spent my entire working career on behalf of working men and women.
Yeah.
And the economic inequality that exists in our country, the rising cost of living, the hot labor summer that we are still sort of making our way through across many industries, where the UAW remains on strike, the SAG-AFTRA remains on strike. Being a voice for working families and women in this moment is an incredibly important opportunity for me to continue the work that I've done my entire career.
You are watching a very special edition of The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson, along with both of California's senators, LaFonza Butler and Alex Padilla. You recently took over for Senator Dianne Feinstein. We've got some images of you with Senator Feinstein, starting when you were a staffer for Senator Feinstein. There's a very young Alex Padilla. Yeah, look at that. And then, of course, another image of you, which is when you were her colleague in the Senate, which is a beautiful image there. What's the most important thing that Senator Feinstein taught you?
I think there's, the personal. I'll lead with that. She was a boss once upon a time, a mentor, supported throughout my career. To think that one day she and I would serve side by side was unimaginable, but I was blessed for the more than 2.5 years that we did. I learned a tremendous amount from her. But the more I step back and reflect, I think the more I appreciate the legacy that she leaves behind. You know, when she first came into the Senate in 1992, the year of the woman, it was years before it was as popular as it might be today to be a fighter against climate change, to be a champion for equality, to be a champion for choice, to think that within her first couple of years, she had the audacity to successfully lead an assault weapons ban in Congress. I mean, that's difficult today. You can't imagine what it was back then. She set a standard, not just in her accomplishments, but in the way she carried herself, the way she worked across the aisle to get things done. In my opinion, she set the standard for any elected official, but particularly for anybody hoping to represent California in the U.S. Senate.
And it's quite something to be now sitting in her seat.
Indeed.
What is the most important thing you took from her example?
You know, when I first met Senator Feinstein, it was in her San Francisco office. And she was doing the thing that I've always come to appreciate that she did well. She was bringing stakeholders together to hear from them. She wasn't going to Washington to represent herself. She was going to Washington representing the cares and hopes and dreams of Californians. And so I am excited to think about continuing in that practice, continuing in that legacy, going to Washington and being a voice for those who for so long may have felt like they didn't have a place to go. And, you know, the fact that I literally will be sitting in her seat on the Senate floor is incredibly emotional for me. The interesting thing is I go over to the desk. Alex takes me over to the desk where I'll be sitting. And Senator Padilla then says, you know, when you pull out the drawer, there's usually the names of the people who have sat in this seat. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, Alex, you wouldn't believe, there is the name Butler in the drawer in that seat. And I'm not sure which Senator Butler it was before or how long that one has even been there. But to have the honor to literally sit in her seat, have my name already be in the seat is incredibly special.
Probably Senator Butler looked a little different. Whoever he was, right?
Whoever he was.
Well, let's talk about that. Both of you appointed by Governor Newsom, and both of you historic appointments. You're the first lesbian to represent California in the U.S. Senate. You're the first Latino to represent California in the U.S. Senate. Right now is a time we're thinking about both those things. This week is Coming Out Week. This month we're celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month. And I'm curious for both of you, what does representation mean to you?
It definitely means for me that it is an opportunity, as the old saying goes, to not be on the menu. Be a representative of the LGBTQ plus community in this moment, where there are so many attacks being driven by right-wing extremists about things that we have as a country learned to love ourselves through and to love our neighbors beyond, that we are relitigating those things is an incredible moment for a champion from our community to really stand and be counted, to be a voice for young people, to be a voice for people to be able to live authentically as who they are. And my wife and my family and I, we take great pride and great responsibility being a torchbearer in this moment. And representation means for the LGBTQ plus community in this moment an opportunity to stand up and show our power and demonstrate our might to fight back against the attacks that are happening all over the country.
I know we've talked in the past about how much it meant for you to have young Latino people come up to you and talk about what seeing you up there means for them. Have you already had that experience?
Oh, absolutely. I was with a young man just yesterday in San Francisco. His name's Edo. And Edo came up and he talked with me about why he was so excited to meet me. And, you know, I asked him, what did he want to be? And he said he wanted to be a computer engineer. I was like, Edo, you're already way ahead of me, bud. And he's like, I said, well, why did you want to come and take a picture with me? What made that so important to you? He said, because you remind me of my classmates. Mm. This is a young Latino, Edo, who's 10 years old in San Francisco. He said I reminded him of his classmates, his favorite best friend, you know, classmates. And I'm excited to be able to be that for Edo, but for all of the Edos across the country.
And it continues, Alex. Look, I think first and foremost, it's important to share that we represent everybody, all 40 million Californians, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum. But if you look at the core that has made this country great, it is our diversity. Mm-hmm. We've been a diverse country since its outset, not a perfect country. And certainly the who's at the decision-making table and who's been sitting in seats of power has not always reflected the diversity of our nation. We're working towards doing better. And there's been a lot of talk last couple of years of not just diversity, but inclusion. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to be at the table. It's another thing to be vocal and insistent while we're at the table. And it's the very reason why, if you recall during the confirmation hearings for now Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, that I chose to make some remarks in Spanish. Because through our representation, through our presence, and through our actions, if we can get more Americans feeling like they are part of this, and that comes with the responsibility as well, then we're all the better off for it.
Right. And as another former senator from California would say, Kamala Harris, our diversity is our strength.
Absolutely.
A big part of both of your lives is being parents. And I know we've talked a lot about your boys over the years. Yeah. How has parenthood shaped your worldview as a politician?
In so many ways. First of all, they're my daily morning inspiration. As much as I, you know, think about my parents and what their sacrifice, their example, I'm motivated by my kids to know that we're going to leave them a country, a planet. What kind of shape is it going to be in when they inherit it? It does, you know, make a number of policy issues very, very real. Whether it's our investments in public education, whether it's the cost of childcare, or anything else. You've met my youngest, Diego, when we were at the USS Iowa for an event a couple of years ago. And I know Nyla's 9, Diego's 8, Alex is 10, my oldest is 16, a high school junior, thinking about college. Not just applications, he's got me thinking about college affordability, those sorts of things. So it really personalizes the agenda for working families across the country and the importance of the work that we do.
And for you?
You know, look, for me, it is, my daughter is the lens through which I view how I show up in the world, whether it's through elected office, my work at Emily's List, or what am I doing to volunteer to make my community better. You know, Alex, we have talked a good deal about so many of the challenges that our country faces in this moment. I think very much about the day that the Dobbs decision was made final and public. That day, I took my daughter to the bus to get dropped off for summer camp. It was about 7:30 in the morning. By the time the decision was made public, a little bit after 10, I was getting the organization ready for all of the plans that we had made, but in a moment of peace, I realized that my child was going to come home less free than when I dropped her off. So in this moment, with this responsibility, sitting in the seat of the woman who made passed so many laws to make our country better for women and girls across the country, I have the opportunity, and I think indeed the responsibility, to think about not just my daughter, but America's daughters. And how do we maintain and sustain the freedom, their freedom, to be able to exercise in this country years to come?
Sounds like a pretty powerful ad to announce you're running for the seat. If you do, come back here and let us know. We end with something called personal issues. This is 30-second game, which you've played many times. This is your first time. So I want to go back and forth and see if we find common ground on cultural favorites. Or maybe not. It shows our diversity, right? So here we go. We'll put 30 seconds up on the clock. Senator Butler, what's your favorite TV show?
Cosby Show.
Senator Padilla?
Favorite TV show now?
Yeah.
The issue is.
Okay, that's the right answer.
That's a great answer.
There's a politician. Musical artist. Or band.
You know what? I'm going to change it from what I've given in the past because inspired by the first dance at our wedding, Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
What about you?
I would say Kirk Franklin right now.
Okay, sports team.
Lakers.
Dodgers.
It's been a tough week for them. Good time to be a Laker fan, though. At least we got that. Our thanks to Senator Padilla and to Senator Butler, and our thanks to you for listening. Next week on The Issue Is, a conversation with former California Governor Jerry Brown about Governor Newsom's upcoming trip to China, which, by the way, we are going on. Also coming up on The Issue Is next week, a conversation with Steve Garvey, the Republican, of course, running for Senate. Our thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time for more of The Issue Is.